Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this is our first comic book review stack of 2024. The comics are fresh, and so are we.
We got new opinions.
We feel differently about things. Our resolution is to come at things pretty in a different old way. So instead, we're going to shit on absolutely everything.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, I
open your mind.
I'm kidding. We're going to do the same old opinions we've always done for years and years and years. So let's kick it off.
Alex, no, not that either. These are new, but not radically new.
Somewhere in the middle? Okay. All right, let's see what happens, starting with this title.
So real quick, Alex, let's start with like a safe, something we can just all get behind.
Just ease into the air. Something that we're not going to fight about.
Ease into it.
I'll tell you what. If you give me a second to talk about this, Fall of the House of X, number one from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Lucas Wernick. This is the official kickoff. It's the beginning of the end of the Krakoa era. And we are picking up on a lot of plot threads here as Cyclops is on trial for crimes against humanity by Orcus. That is their final move to move in and just, as they say, at a certain point of the issue, take the hood off and be what they're going to be, which is they want to kill all mutants. Meanwhile, the X-Men are saying, well, we're not ready, but we're out of time. We're going to fight back against them and take the planet back at the same time. So I know Justin and I have been in the tank for the Fall of X stuff, but I thought maybe reading this issue, Pete, you wanted this to end for a while. So getting to see how it all goes down, I thought potentially might be interesting to you, might be a refreshing change of pace. And there are a lot of big things that go down in here. We get an awesome sequence, I thought, with Cyclops and Wolverine talk about the fastball special.
Colossus and Wolverine.
Wait, what
I'll
did
get
I say?
That. What?
Cyclops.
Cyclops.
I don't know. They're all the same.
Can I read the notes that I have?
Bunch of shit dressed up in costumes. Who even cares? Well, Grow up. It's 2024. Get a job.
Alex, old man Alex has checked in 2024. Everyone has a tipping point. Alex hit it. Pete, you have some notes you want to shout?
Yep. Okay. Okay, so first off, it starts with Cyclops talking about his dreams. I don't care. I don't want more Cyclops. I want less Cyclops.
There's barely any Cyclops in your life. You don't have to. This is the merest taste of Cyclops, and you're already mad.
Okay, so I tried to be an open mind about this. I was like, "Oh man, the Dukes is on this. This is number one. Let's try to be open minded."
The Wernick.
And then it starts with Cyclops, and I was like, "Fuck." And so then we see the pinata or screwball special. Dark times. These are dark times.
No,
I didn't like that. It's taking something we know and love and then making it creepier and weirder, where you throw it at Wolverine and he just holds up his claws and just fucking shreds the guy.
What? I was like, that sounds like something you'd love.
I thought you would like that also.
It's just weird. It's just, I don't know why. Okay. And then they've been hyping up Nimrod the whole time, and Nimrod gets a loogie hocked on him and he's just done. That's it. That was the big villain showdown. And then Hoppin' Island turned into a Groot and just kind of like swam away. I'm sure someone's having fun with this. I just wish it was me because I see things happening and I'm like, oh man, I want to like this. I just can't get behind it.
I it's nice to hear that you want to like it. That's the first step toward liking something. And and great. Great step forward for Pete in this, the year of our Lord Cyclops 2024. I enjoyed this. I like that we get little sort of tastes. I like that it felt like this was going to be a big rallying point issue. But instead, Professor X fucks up their plan almost immediately for reasons we don't know. I was like, what? They're still not on the same page? And I that feels intentional in a way that I think is actually nice. I like that it's a little bit scrappier of an X-Men situation. I like Cyclops taking more center stage, dropping some philosophy here, and being able to sort of – I like the choices that were made here. I won't spoil them. I agree the screwball special, I was like, this is quite dark, but I thought that's what you would like about it, Pete. But maybe that's meant to be a comment on the place the X-Men are at, though we're up against the wall.
Well, you've been talking a lot, Justin, about there being a lack of central point to the X-Men books. I know I've said several other books, I've felt that, but this is definitely, okay, here we go. This is like if they've been pushing the ball up the hill the entire time, Sisyphus style, they've finally gotten to that mountain peak and it's starting to roll down here. And you really can, to your point, feel that in the issue. They have multiple conversations where they're like, we're not ready. We are not ready for this fight. We got to do it anyway. You do, like you said, you have that great thing with Professor X screwing it up again, which they don't know what's going on. But you also have Kitty Pryde smiling, which we haven't seen at least in a couple of months, which I thought was great. Being like, here we go, we're having fun.
That's why you liked
it. No, I liked a lot of different parts of this. It did feel like classic X-Men to me.
Kitty smiles at Alex.
Kitty smiles the whole world. Yeah, she was smiling directly at me, I believe.
Exactly. You lit up like a fucking Christmas tree.
I did. What a nice week for me. And then she looked at me and said, I love you, Alex. Leave your wife for me. And I was like, well, it's a new
You're year. Like, I can't. Oh, no.
But you're two-dimensional, and I'm three-dimensional. Yeah. How can this ever work?
Make me intangible, and let's run away from it all, you say.
No, I liked that this felt like classic X-Men to me, down to the shout-outs to the trial of Magneto in Paris. I think that was X-Men 200. I remember that very distinctly, that whole plot line. I thought that was good. I thought this was a really good Cyclops in here. I liked the speech that he had. I liked the goodbye
that he had.
I think there's every chance that he is going to die here. The line that he says to one of the doctors from Orcus, one of the people from Orcus who's imprisoning him, when they say, hey, somebody's here to see you. He says, oh, is it a funny, powerful redhead with sharp knives floating around her? Great line.
Very
fun. Really well written, very funny for such a dire situation.
Agree.
And really great art throughout as well. So I'm excited about this closing event.
Well, you think Cyclops is going to die? I think he needs a huge redemptive moment here. He's been down and out this whole, almost the whole Krakoan era.
This is, if you want to speculate wildly for a second, you've got this miniseries, you got the other one that Kieran Gillen is doing, Rise of the Powers of X, that takes place 10 years later after they lost. I think there's got to be some sort of soft reset, if you want to call it that. Like, not the killing Moira hard reset, because that would reset the entire timeline, but there's going to be something that's going to reset the situation. And I think when you have a reset, you can do things like, oh, you think they're going to save Cyclops? Nope, he is literally hung in the town square or something like that. And
that's dark. That's much darker than I think.
I think we're going to get that. I think we're going to see.
You think
over
they're
the going to
pinata special him?
I think they are. Absolutely. You're going to do that next time you see a pinata, Pete? Take three knives and be like, pinata special. That's what you do.
Throw the pinata at me. I want to go to a party and have Pete be like, throw that pinata at me. And all the kids be like, what are you doing, you two old weirdos? And they're like, don't you worry. Pete holds up three plastic knives.
Three plastic knives and tosses them a copy of Fall of House of X #1. It's like, there's your explanation.
And just so you know, Pete has had plastic grafted to his bones. It's not so like Wolverine.
It's plastic surgery. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Pete's had plastic surgery. That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Well, clearly you didn't kneel before this comic, but maybe you kneel before Zod, #1 from DC Comics, written by Joe Casey, art by Dan McCade. The segue's even better in 2024.
Not yet.
This is, of course,
he's saying wait for it, Pete.
Yeah, wait for it. You got to wait for it. This is spinning off of the Superbad books. If you don't know the current continuity of Zod, he is married, however Kryptonians do it, to Ursa. They have a son who's kind of a jerk. He's going to be spinning off into his own series called Sinister Sons. And meanwhile, they have their own planet that has been recognized with sovereignty by the Federation. It's not the Federation of Planets, the United Planets, or whatever they call it in the DC universe.
I think it's called the United Planets.
I don't know. Grow up. Come on. So that's what's going on here. But we basically got like sort of a light Game of Thrones situation, I would call it, where it's a lot of palace intrigue and other things going on. But the promise that more is to come as Zod potentially goes hog wild. What do you guys think about this issue?
Well, I was like, what the hell is this going to be? And I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know what to expect, but I feel like they did a great exploration into basically it seemed like a day in the life of Zod here on his in his home world with his family. And I wasn't surprised to see that his son was a real asshole. I thought it might have been fun if it was like his son was like totally opposite, you know, like super caring, bright, you know, just kind of full of sunshine individual. But yeah, I like this a lot more than I thought it was going to. The art's fantastic. I was impressed.
I really like the art in this. I was very surprised by the book itself. It's surprisingly day in the life of a guy who's pretty miserable the whole time. He's so mad.
Zod, dude, what'd you think? He was skipping around, being like, woohoo.
Well, I imagine, a lighter side.
I imagine that a lot of this book is going to be exactly what his son prods him on, basically being like, you're not Zod. You're not being Zod right now. You're just running this planet. You're playing it safe. You're supposed to be a conqueror. You're supposed to take over the galaxy.
Bureaucracy.
And that's the push and pull here that we're going to, I assume, eventually get towards, but I guess we'll see.
And you're saying, Alex, don't prod the Zod. Don't prod the Zod.
I don't want to say my favorite episode of Seinfeld, but it's definitely top five.
Yeah, that very well could be an episode of Seinfeld. I also think it's funny in here, the Coons. Everyone's wrecking the Coons. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't they? The alien folks that come down and they're just always getting murdered. They're the Chitauri of the DC universe. Like, let's get these guys a win.
Yeah. Huh? Totally. They kneel before Coons. There you go.
Yeah.
Pine and Merrimack, number one from Image Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Fran Gallan. This is a new mystery series about two detectives who never take on murders and never take on intense cases. They both have some darkness in their past, but do they get sucked into a case they don't want to take? Of course they do by the end.
Aw, oh, man.
I was going to say, of all the books we read this week, I was like, Pete is going to love this. This is a over-the-plate Pete rom-com beat book with like some maybe interesting mystery, but just like cute characters hanging out. Did I nail it, Pete?
You did, mostly. I didn't like how she treated him, but I really love their story. I love this whole setup. The art was super tight nanners. I feel like this has like a cool a tone to it, like a lot of yellows and stuff, which I felt like gave off like a cool vibe. I thought this was like a great kind of setup. Like they did a great job of being like, all right, this is the first issue. This is what the deal is. Buckle up because it's going to be more of this. And I was like, yeah, great. I hope it gets to a little bit better place. You know, maybe it's just a weird moment in time that we saw. But the way she was like, get him. You know what I mean?
I really liked their relationship. I thought it was really like, really felt really real in the way they were so familiar with each other and could do stuff like that. Feels like a nice love story at the center of this stuff. Like this feels like a TV show to me that I would watch.
Agreed.
In a moment.
I mean, a couple of reference points I'll make. This feels like an extension of the romance that Kyle Starks wrote in I Hate This Place a little bit because you have a very mismatched pair going on there. It also, and this is just because of the detective thing, reminded me a little bit of Stumptown, the Greg Rucka book, a little bit.
Wow, okay. Maybe good refs.
Funnier, because it's Kyle Starks. And even when you have a relatively serious book, he can't help but throw a couple of jokes in there. Like the title, their names are not Pine and Merrimack. That is where they work. And that feels like a good recurring joke to keep playing.
Yeah.
But it also seems like it's going to get very dark as it goes. So I'm curious to see what this series becomes. Next up, Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number one from Marvel, written by Jed MacKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. A whole month ago, Moon Knight died. Is he back? Probably.
Truth.
There you go.
This book has been constantly, this is number one, but the Moon Knight series leading up to this. It's sort of strange. I haven't quite gotten a handle on it. I like this issue. I like the point of view we get. And the fact that Moon Knight has gone from being this sort of the way Jed MacKay's writing it is it's a real ensemble group. There's all these a couple different Knights of Khonshu and other characters that are part of it. Mm-hmm. And now Moon Knight feels like the threat. I actually like that idea, a book where the hero is the problem and these people have to solve it. It's just the path to that idea has been strange. I wish we'd gotten a little nod to that earlier. I feel like the next issue, if that's where we're going, is going to be really great.
Yeah, I agree with what JT Sizzle is saying. I loved by the time this ended, I was like, ooh, I'm excited about what's about to go down. Yeah, I like the big twist at the end. Ben Grimm being like the greatest friend / human ever. Like, I loved how, like, in the middle of all this madness, you just had Ben Grimm just like being unbelievable, just being the just fucking like, rock.
Death in the family. I'm going to show up.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. Yeah. Making all the calls, making sure people knew about, you know, and then of course it's, you know, all ruined by the end. But I think that, I have very interesting kind of cool last panel where I'm like, oh shit, what's this going to be?
I think I'm a little more positive than both of you guys, just because I have been very confused about the plot in the last couple of issues. So this, perhaps by comparison, felt crystal clear to me in terms of what was going on. It felt like if you haven't been reading the past couple of issues, you could pick this right up and jump right in. It resets the situation, reminds you / lets you know what the characters are and what their status quo is. We're mostly focusing on this 19-year-old vampire named Reese who runs the Midnight Mission for Moon Knight. But like you guys said, great last page, great cliffhanger, good art. I'm more intrigued to read this now than I was with the previous arc. So,
agree.
Good job, Marvel. You got me. Batman 141 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jorge Jimenez and Dustin Nguyen.
JJ.
Finishing up the Mind Bomb storyline where Batman, a bunch of different things going on, but Batman has found that Batman of Zur-En-Arr, his secondary personality, has been taken into Failsafe, the not evil technically, but evil robot who hunted him down and stopped him. In this issue, he's trying to escape. Goes in some bunch of different directions as folks try to help him out at the same time. What'd you guys think?
Well, let me ask you real quick. What are your secondary personalities? Like, what is the Alex of Zur-En-Arr like? Ooh. The Pete of Zur-En-Arr? What's the more distilled down version that you're hiding?
Well, if you guys listen to Comic Book Club News, the daily podcast that I do.
And no, I do.
I'm kidding.
That's where you're, that's your that's Zur-En-Arr.
That's where you let bury your soul.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy that
this
you
is just
on
the
that podcast
version of yourself here. This is
that's
like,
your id is you just like delivering the news. That's really funny, actually. I believe it. Yeah, the distilled Alex is just saying news.
Yep.
And Pete, the distilled you.
I don't know how to answer that. I really thought that
because you already are. This is the Pete of Zur-En-Arr is already taken over.
Yeah. You should actually listen to Pete's podcast, Comic Book Club Weather.
Oh, yeah. Justin, are you asking us because you have something cool to say? Is that why?
No, I like to make conversation on these podcasts. I know we spend a lot of time on the ones and twos talking shop, but I like to get to know you guys while we're doing it. You know?
Okay.
Because
sometimes you start this by being like, man, I got a really cool, when it gets back to me, I got something queued up. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Like when I say stuff like, do you guys need to know any skateboard tricks? And then I get on the camera and do my sick skateboard trick.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I wish people could see that because
me too. I wish you know, we always are doing these audio mediums. I'm more of a visual guy. Can we switch over?
And what's funny just is visual? I can hear the fact that you have a hat backwards on. You know, like I don't need to see it. I can hear it. You know,
shouts
to
that. And that's Pete has such sharp hearing. That's the Zurinar talking. Very sharp ears. So can you hear a backwards hat?
Well, I think we've done a good job of reviewing this comic book.
I really thought this had an amazing ending. I love where it puts Batman and what is kind of teased to come. The art, though, by JJ is just, it's just so great to look at. And the design of the Jorge Jimenez, JJ.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. I just think that
like the kind of design of the robot kind of evil Batman is really great. You know, the premise is a little like whatever. Of course, in another universe, Batman designed a fucking robot Batman to take over, and he's going to over Batman. But I think that where this kind of puts him is very interesting. So that kind of all that aside, I'm very excited to kind of see where this goes.
I like this as well. I think if I can sell this to anyone who hasn't been reading it, this is like Batman's Ultron has been created here with like robot version that. With, you know, more Machiavellian personality inserted in, and Batman is going to have trouble fighting it. And I think this is great. I like that Chip Zdarsky is just going so hard.
Going hard.
Yeah. But perennially, I feel like I say this every now and again. I want to see a Batman where Bruce Wayne is just like having a fun time. I want to see a fun. That's the variation. I like that Chip is going so hard in this direction, and not necessarily that Chip has to do this, given, but he'd be good at it given his comedy background in a lot of books. A Bruce Wayne that actually can be the Batman the Animated Series Bruce, who is a little bit lighter. I think we're ready for that direction because every Bat book has gone so far in this harder, darker direction.
It's funny that you bring it up with this book in particular, which has a sequence where Batman of Zurinar is like, you know, you could just be Bruce and have a nice time. And Batman is like,
that's what made me think.
I never do that.
Never had a nice time.
How dare you?
That's what
don't
I
don't you like, say my name and then nice.
I was like, try a vacation, guy. Like, take a break. Beat this robot and take a
this
break.
This actually sounds pretty good. Like, he knows, of course, that Zur is going to go too far with this stuff. But at the same time, reading that sequence, I was like, I don't know, man. Take it. You already lost a head. Take it up on it.
This is an indictment of AI, though, really, I think, is what maybe that's the metaphor Chip's dealing with here. Like,
great backup stories by Dustin Nguyen as well on art. Always really good. As Zur fights Zurs from throughout the multiverse. Really cool issue. Packless number 0 from Image Comics by Dustin Weaver. This is a collection of much older stories by Dustin Weaver before he was starting out in the comic book industry when he was trying to break in. So it's a bunch of weird, wild things about half-naked rats. Pete, I was wondering, did you like
my
that?
My favorite type.
Coming in hot, yeah. Don't read this in a public place.
It's not that big of a deal. It's just some light, topless rats. Yeah, which anatomically speaking, they're called titty rats. Alex, that's your book, right? Or movie. What are you pitching? It's a multimedia
project. It's a book, but it's a flip book, so it's kind of like a movie.
Oh, nice. Oh, I have a lot of titty rat NFTs that you sold me. the value is really plummeted on those, by the way.
Oh, you were on titty rat? I was on titty rat as well. Were you on the Discord? Because nobody's there.
Yeah, no, not a lot of conversation.
Pete, do you want to get in the titty rat Discord?
No.
He doesn't even want to get in the titty rat discussion. I don't think he's ready for
the first story goes a little hard with the furry stuff. But
anatomically speaking, it's incorrect, is what you're saying, right, Pete?
Yeah, exactly.
Just from where the breasts would be.
That was legitimately my actual thought.
Me too.
Rats aren't built like that.
Yeah. It wouldn't be there. They'd be down on the other side.
There's a fun
That's where I want them.
There's a fun collection of artistic ideas and stories that are really well executed once you get past the furry stuff. Wyatt.
Move those breasts downtown is what I say. And I don't mean that just for this book. I mean in general.
There's your pull quote, Dustin Weaver.
There's your pull quote, Dustin. DW
wanted red.
Did you want a DW, a Darkwing
Duck? But, oh, Dustin
the
Weaver.
Other
oh,
stories.
Somebody reviewed my book on their podcast. Let me listen in.
The other okay. stories.
Good pull quote. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
The other stories are enjoyable. If you can get past the first one, apparently these guys can't. But yeah, that's there's some real kind of it reminds me of like comics in the 80s and stuff like that. It has that all kind of feel to it, and it's cool.
Well, and that's what I liked about this a lot, like seeing someone's work when they're trying to break in. I feel like we don't get that. Mm-hmm. And these are – the stories aren't – they're not full versions of them, which the back
like
matter
– early scripts, you know?
Early scripts, yeah. And these are early sort of fragments because it's not the full – you know, you don't really know everything that's happening. And in the back matter, Dustin talks about how this was four pages of a 14-page story. But especially the Wildcats – book that he does, and then he changed the names for this. I was like, oh, that's it's just really if you're trying to break into comics mm-hmm. or are interested in doing it on your own, this would you would learn something from this, I think. So it's yep. worth that.
Totally agree. I know I was making a lot of jokes at the beginning here, but I legitimately even thought the Detective Rat story was kind of fun and interesting.
That was actually my favorite story of all of them. Yeah.
Yes. So I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I would. And like you said, just as an artifact and a teaching tool, it's kind of interesting. So worth checking out. Beware the Planet of the Apes, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Alvaro Lopez. Thanks. This is not tying into the modern Planet of the Apes movies. This is tying into the original one to the point that we have
the prequels.
It's the prequel to that. But we have panels from the Marvel Comics Planet of the Apes adaptation, I believe, from back in the day that are peppered throughout this book. I'm not the biggest Planet of the Apes guy, but I thought this was very cool the way it was laid out at the very least. I was really fascinated by making this experiment to make a prequel by using vintage comic book panels and mixing them in with modern comic book art.
I agree. I love the use of the original comic panels, and it really sort of put a pin in what the project here is. Which is hard, like you're saying, like it's not the modern Planet of the Apes. It's very specifically before the only Planet of the Apes that existed back then that they were doing. Like it's a hard geography to understand, and those panels I thought really helped. I like the characters. I like the part of the world this is exploring. I like that we get a map. Don't you love a map mm-hmm. of this world? It takes you back. It reminded me of when I was in high school, I read the Planet of the Apes book, and that – it's not nearly as campy as the movie. It's just a very like over the plate, like literate sci-fi book. And this feels like it's in the vein of that.
Yeah. I just feel like this Planet of the Apes is not my bag. But I really love the art choices. I don't know. It kind of all started when someone on my birthday wanted me to go see a fucking shitty movie. No, I just never have been it just seems so weird. Anyways,
no, you don't I agree like that with it's you, Earth. Pete. It's weird. It's a weird concept. It's a very strange concept to be like the apes talk and the humans don't talk. How did that happen?
That's not nearly as weird as any other comic in the stack. This is much more normal. It's much more clear that it's just the apes and the humans switch places. That's very over the plate. And you're like, too weird. Can't imagine not talking.
Some ideas are like, yeah, you're on board. And others, you know, miss me with that shit. I don't know what to tell you, man. But the artistically, what they're doing in this, it's amazing looking. It's got such a cool kind of feel to it. And you can really kind of feel the old but new in such a cool way.
One last thing I want to say before we move on is I like how these 20th century books, not 20th Century Fox, that's not the name of the company anymore, are starting to enter some sort of experimental phase, I feel like. Like, we got very straight across the board, really good Alien books, really good Predator books, good Planet of the Apes books as well. But this, like we're talking about, even though it has a straightforward Planet of the Apes story, the way that they're laying it out and hitting it is very experimental. I don't know if you guys heard the news, but they're going to be releasing a What If Aliens co-written by Paul Reiser about what if his character survived aliens. And that's the sort of thing where, like, I've never asked that question, but it's weird.
Very few have.
Paul Reiser clearly did. And yep. If
Paul Reiser,
Rough Risers, a t-shirt
I own.
Yes, that you could actually buy at threadless.com/comicbookclub. Anyway, my point being that they're really taking chances here with these books is great. That's the sort of thing you can do in comics that you can't necessarily do in TV or movies. So cool. More of that, please. Birds of Prey, number 5 from DC Comics.
There we go.
Written by Kelly Thompson, art by Dane. Probably a first name that I forgot to write down there, I guess. Anyway.
No, I think that's it.
Oh, is it just Dane? This is following up on the birds have been attacking kind of Themyscira to try to stop a demonic creature who's trying to get inside of Sin and take over her in order to destroy the world. There's some twists and turns in terms of how this demonic creature acts, and we get some great action sequences throughout here. I will admit, at first, I was a little disappointed that Leonardo Romero, who's been doing gorgeous art for the first 4 issues, was not on board here. But I think this really came up with some really fascinating looking visuals anyway. What did you guys think?
Yeah, didn't skip a beat. I really love this amazing art, fun team up action here. I love this group of individuals that we're focusing on in this Birds of Prey. And tons of action, fun ending. I also really love the quote, you know. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. I mean, that's great stuff. That's just fun stuff here.
What do you think about that, Justin?
The quote specifically?
Solid-ish.
Well, just that clearly Black Canary has seen Watchmen.
Watchmen, right? Yeah. Or read the comic?
No, she watched the Ultimate Cut.
You think she's a Snyderhead?
Yeah, 100%. She hasn't even watched A Child of Fire, Part 1 of Rebel Moon. Everybody knows.
Oh, we all know. We all know the subtitle of Rebel Moon. Yeah, definitely. What a great reveal on this podcast that Black Canary loves the Snyderverse. I agree with you. I was incorrect. It is Arist Dane is the name of the artist on this. Okay. Yeah. But let me say also, I did miss the art from the – because that's such a selling point and such a high watermark for this book. But I did like – even though it's different, I did like it like you were saying. And this book continues to be – I like this combination of characters. I want to see more of them. Big fight issue here. But I want to see more of them just hanging out perhaps next
plus week. Kelly Thompson. I mean, come on. Kelly Thompson.
That's shouts, yeah. Of course.
Next up, The Ministry of Compliance, number 2 from IDW, written by John Ridley, art by Stefano Raphael. If you haven't...
No, Pete first.
No. If you haven't checked it out, John Ridley was actually on our show this past week, our live show, and the podcast. You can go listen to it. And then, Pete, you say...
We should have him on the show.
No, you say we should have talked to him about this book. That's your line.
No, that's why Pete had to go first. That's why I was directing traffic on that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, anyway.
Man, we worked really hard on that script and we messed it up.
Did I send texts over New Year's, all of New Year's Eve for no reason, Pete? To mess up that script?
When I got the text at 11:59 and then 12:01, Alex, I was saying, take a break. Let it rest. You got to celebrate.
I did take a break for midnight when I kissed Anderson Cooper right on my TV and then went right back to it.
Nice.
The only person
you
who
met,
loves me.
Well, you meant you kissed your TV or you were there with Anderson?
No, I kissed my TV. I don't know Anderson Cooper. Nice. I kissed my TV because I wanted to kiss somebody that loves me.
You make it sound that's more normal. But yeah. I guess let the audience decide.
Yeah, you decide, true believers. Anyway, listen to John Ridley on our podcast. He was amazing. Great chat with him. But regardless of that, I still like this book a whole ton. There's a wild sci-fi premise where aliens have taken over the Earth. There is dissension in their ranks. They may need to leave the Earth, but they've been insidiously getting into every single part of society. One member of this alien race is trying to figure out a massive conspiracy that's trying to take them down and exactly what's going on. There's disgusting sword play that happens throughout, cool ass action sequences. This book is great.
Agree completely. I love the world. I love the sort of the philosophical point of view is not what you expect. It's to use the words that Alex nailed in the interview that John echoed. It's very off kilter in a way. This book goes hard. It's sort of a punchy in the neck type book, both with its action and sort of point of view. One of my favorite reads right now. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, I love this book. I love all the action. I love the art. And, you know, even though it's kind of like dark and kind of messed up, but, you know, it still has, you know, time to have some fun. You know, it's that old joke, you know, you see a man with no arms, if you, you know, jerk him off, he'll tell you anything.
Oh, I love that old joke.
Never heard that. Wait, how's that setup punchline work? That feels just like a philosophy.
I didn't write the comic. You know, that was the comic.
You wrote that. That's sort of your what Confucius proverb is that from? I don't remember that one.
I think it's just along those lines of different you know, jokes that you.
And let me ask you, how many times have you encountered that situation?
Too many
in real life. It yeah, sounds like well, you you're a believer show
at the pit. Pete would always go over to the bar and well, fill in the blanks. This, like I said, this book is great. The one thing that I wanted to mention additionally that we didn't talk about the show, we did get into it a little bit with John, where he was talking about how, I don't know, he was using the phrase a little bit about like social justice ideas and things that have a greater sense with society. We were talking about how this flips it a little bit, but there's a really interesting sequence in here where the main character, who is, I would say, black presenting, and the reason for that is she is an alien, talks a little bit about why, what it is like for her to have this face being an alien who actually rules the world. This sort of complicated sci-fi idea you don't see a lot in comic books. And the way that he explores it, like Pete was saying, it's fun at the same time. It's interesting. It's thought-provoking. But you have a good time reading this comic book, and it's bloody and violent while it goes. So great stuff. Let's move on to talk about Marvel Meow, number one from Marvel by Now Fuji. This is another one of those collections of Marvel Unlimited titles like Jeff the Land Shark. Before it, it's Jeff. And also the Alligator Loki book. Here we are getting a bunch of Marvel cats who are teaming up with their heroes. Pete, you're a resident cat guy. What'd you think about this one?
Oh, this is glorious in all the right ways. I mean, this is really funny. It's cute, adorable. It's, you know, very cat friendly, which is great. You know, it, yeah, it hits all the marks. And what's great is you're getting like 64 pages of nonstop cat action. So
you know, this kept going in a way I did not expect. It's felt like I was puffing
like
the fluff.
When you own a cat, man, when you have nonstop. A cat, you're like, I want this to end. And they're like, nah, bro, you're in this for the long haul, man.
Yeah, this felt like I was puffing the Marvel fluff all day and all night in a lot of ways. Some of these are fun. The X-Men one is the one I enjoyed the most. And I also liked how it was, they just really named the cats. They really named the cats in this.
This got better as it went along, I think. I like the art throughout. It's very cute.
The art's amazing. It's adorable.
Art's very cute. Cute cats. Didn't understand what like was going on in some of the strips.
I also did not understand maybe a lot of them. What was
the
happening?
The ones that worked the best for me is when they were versus, like it was one of the hero cats versus a villain. Yes. Those were very clear and very fun. The one of whichever cat it was versus Sandman, where he ends up using him as a litter box.
Fun.
Good bit.
Makes sense.
Good
bit. You saw that coming. But
and
yeah,
I like the Loki cat thing. Loki cat the actually
Loki
being
is a
Loki.
Cat. It was great. Yeah.
Cute. If you like cats and you like superheroes, you already own this book. Poison Ivy, number 18 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Luana Vecchio. Poison Ivy is trying to stop a plague of her own creation from destroying Gotham City. She's working with Killer Croc. She's working with Solomon Grundy. In this age, she sucks it up and tries to work with Batman. Continues to be one of the best books on the stands. And I love Luana Vecchio stepping in for art, a perfect fit for the book as well.
Agree. I love Poison Ivy's take on Batman. We're like, oh, he's such a dick. Like, yeah. you rarely see a full commitment to Batman sucks in any DC comic. And to have it be here and never pulls back and says, like, well, you know, I think he's going to help me. She's just like, man, this guy sucks. He's so annoying. He's probably not even going to help me. He's so condescending. I love that. I love the commitment to Solomon Grundy's poem in this comic. Shouts to that. And great reveal at the end.
Yeah, this is just amazing, and it keeps getting crazier and crazier with every issue. The twists and turns on this from where it started to where it is really glorious. It's been such a great roller coaster ride in all the right ways. I love how all over the place is, and when I pick it up, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know I'm going to have a great time because the art is super tight nanners. And Batman being a dick is such a fun thing to do, and it's done well.
Are we doing nanners all year, or is that just for right now? Or is there another version?
Right now we're in the nanners vibe. We'll see what happens, man.
Nanners. Nice. Cool. That feels like a very, like, I'm high, I'm like a fish fan vibes. Is that nanners? Is that where nanners is at?
I don't know, man.
Pete, just getting farther Maybe and farther I've seen away fish. From the microphone.
I don't know.
You've never seen you've seen some fish.
Yeah, maybe I've seen some fish.
What is going on here? Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 11 from Boom Studios.
It's pronounced Behish.
Written by Jason Aaron, art by Nick Dragota and Alexandra Tefegi. We have flipped the story here as Maceo and Mezzi have officially broken up. And now Nick Dragota, who has been drawing the future sequences of the series, is the main artist because we are mostly seeing what's happening in the future. And Alexandra Tefegi is moving to the background for flashbacks to back in the day when they had just broken up. As we've been talking about nonstop with this book, one of our top books of last year, this is really delving more into the arc of a relationship. Really curious to see where it lands here.
Oh,
it feels to me a little bit like what happens when you see your old lover again after years, and how does that affect you? I feel like we're entering the final arc here, and I'm curious what the final statement of this book is going to be.
Wait. So let me just get this straight. What you're saying is when you saw the ex in this comic controlling flame rats that were murdering people, you were like, oh, yeah, this reminds me of when I see my ex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Wow. My ex controls flame rats. Mm-hmm. My ex is a lot of them.
Wow. That's you guys got a lot going on.
All my exes, flame rat to Texas.
Okay. Right. Yeah, this is punching above its weight class in such a glorious way. And I mean by that is this post-APOC love story that is real, you know, like it's insane and all over the place, but it's also there's a realness to this love story and the kind of ups and downs of it that you can really feel, which is really interesting, and all this kind of madness. So, yeah, kudos to the writing and the art. It's just, it's an insane story that's told really well. And, I'm all for it.
I agree. I love this book. I think the central metaphor is so smartly done and unspooled in a way that, like, keeps catching me off guard. The Nick Dragota art transition here is great. I like the details we're getting, and the turnabout from both of our characters is setting up for just a great confrontation.
Thanos, number 2 for Marvel, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Luca Pizzari. Thanos has attacked Fresno, as he always was wont to do. Specifically, he's looking for a woman, a mysterious woman, who we don't know much about unless you look at her, and then you can figure it out. And meanwhile, the Illuminati, the strongest team of heroes in the Marvel Universe, are trying to stop Thanos from his goal. We find out exactly what's going on here, mostly in this issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
Wow. Thought you were going to talk there, Pete. Real silence is golden.
I was hoping you were going to talk.
Well, and that may be because this is a strange I want to ride with Thanos in this comic. And we are not. This is like a fight issue with the Illuminati, but the Illuminati are, we don't really get to see what's up. Thanos feels like not super powerful in this in a way that I wish was different. I hope in the next issue we can maybe flip and get his understanding of it, because there's sort of a reveal coming in the next issue, but if the reveal is just he's obsessed with death and he thinks this woman is death, or maybe she is death, okay, well, I think we're ahead of that a little bit, and I just want to know the emotionality behind it going into it.
Yeah, I agree with what the Sizz is saying there. In this issue, we have Thanos out here just stealing women, and you can't really do that, so it's a little weird. So, yeah.
I think one of the Infinity Gems does that.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. That's not a good gem.
That's a bad gem.
Yeah,
that's
a bad gem. Then we should get rid of that gem. I just think that, like, yeah, I know there's something else happening right here, but right now it feels a little creepy and weird. So, yeah, I want to move past that.
The series is very goofy, which I was not expecting. There's a lot of jokes about Thanos on his chair, and he's riding in a tiny car at one point, which is hilarious, I guess.
And when he's in the car, it's weird. Like, the metal is shaped around him. He looks like a toy. Yeah. He looks like Thanos, like a infant's toy of Thanos in a, like a...
So I guess I don't know what I was expecting from the series, but this is not it. I don't mind it. It's just a very different tone than I would think would come from a series and the story that they're telling here. But there you go. Shazam, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Goran Suzuka. In this issue, Shazam is first fighting a Bizarro Shazam and then bonding with his Shazamily, would you say, Justin?
I would call him that, Shazamily.
Before that's he ends up battling Black Adam over a misunderstanding involving space dinosaurs, among other things. What did you guys think about this one?
Well, you know, love the art. You know, I felt like this was another fun-ish, great action story. I thought the Black Adam fight was epic. I love how the art has kind of this old school feel for it. And then fun with dinosaurs. This was just seemed like Mark Waid was having a good time.
A lot of dinosaurs here. It feels like Mark Waid currently really is happy about that, the idea that these dinosaurs are into paperwork. That is fun. It feels like the last arc before this had so much juice to it, and this feels like it's turned down just a little bit. So I'm hoping it gets to turn back up going forward.
Yeah, it's not the worst is when the juice gets turned down.
The juice is running. Like, yeah, I love when the juice is
up. Well, when you do that, you know what you got to do is Drive Like Hell, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Rich Dueck, art by Alex Cormack. Is that better? Are we back on track now, Pete, with the segues?
I mean, we're so back. I wish you wouldn't have called it out, but yeah, I guess so.
We're so back.
We're so back. This is about a demonic car, and we find out why a bunch of demons are chasing it. Turns out Gabriel's horn is in the back, or rather, both of them, I guess. I don't know.
He's got his business horn and his, his pleasure horn.
Business horn in the front.
The show horn.
No, the business horn's in the back. And the party horn's in the front is what he's got.
If you meet a no-armed man and grabbed his business horn, then you're in good shape. That's what it is, right, Pete?
That's right. You play a man's horn, he'll tell you what you need.
Man, that is the most uncle energy I've ever heard on this podcast, is what you uncle. Just said.
Drive Like Hell, what you guys think about that book?
Yeah, this is crazy fun. You know, angels, demon cars, couple of crazy humans. Sounds like a good
uncle,
time.
I don't know. Uncle okay. energy. Uncle yeah. energy. I like that we get some big reveals here. This feels like this issue is sort of being like, okay, here's what we're all dealing with. And next issue is going to be the huge, massive car chase explosion. Everything's coming to a big head.
Car chase.
I like how casually they beat the angel Gabriel here and then are like, now everyone hates us. Let's go.
Yeah, it's not exactly the same thing, but this issue in particular gave me a little bit of Preacher energy off of it.
Yes,
in
terms great of call. Great call.
Exactly what they did to that angel. I'm having a lot of fun reading this book. They take a break off the road here, but like you said, I think it's going to be car chase action next issue. Definitely check it out. And also check out our interview with Rich Dueck from a couple of live shows back. We talked to him about this book. Fantastic Four number 15 from Marvel, written by written by Ryan North, art by Ivan Fiorello. The Fantastic Four sent away all their kids in the Baxter Building a year earlier to try to keep them safe after circumstances too complicated to explain. In this issue, they didn't come back when they were supposed to, and it turns out it's because of an app that's been bubbling around in the background the past couple of issues that creates a massive giant brain. As usual, Ryan North is taking science topics and mixing them with science fiction to make actual science fiction in Fantastic Four. He talked about this a little bit online, but it seems very clear here that he is very inspired by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's run on Fantastic Four. And I love that. I think I talked about this in the last issue as well. They're just throwing new details at the Fantastic Four and new ideas there. It feels so fresh, and it's something that we haven't gotten in a while versus the umpteenth Doctor Doom story or the 5,000th Nihilist story. Hey. Add new things, add new villains. It's great.
I agree. I like this Dr. is so. Doom. Yeah, he's cool. He's in here. He's in this. It's something I want to talk about in a sec. But like, this book is so fresh. It puts the Fantastic Four in such different context all the time, and it feels it's such a meal. So many comics, some can feel a little slight. This feels like such a so many ideas, so many great emotions. Reed Richards really goes through it here, going from like thinking he's won, losing completely, feeling guilty, trying to save the day, like. Feeling incredible loss. It's such a great roller coaster in this, and just great science fiction ideas at play. And then Dr. Doom at the end, I just the Dr. Doom's placement in the Fantastic Four family, how would you define this? Because it's he's like enemy that they is trying to kill them, but also like grandfather that they have to say like uncle. Don't worry, we're all fine. Yeah, uncle. He's like, don't worry, we're all fine. We love you. Like, what is the deal?
Well, part of the way that I think they frame Dr. Doom in the modern era is he's not the cackling villain. He just thinks he can do everything better than Reed, and he knows the right thing for the universe. I don't know that it started there, but definitely Jonathan Hickman's take on Doom and his relationship with Valeria really pushed it in that direction, I think.
Well, it's weird. He hates Reed and thinks Reed's an idiot, but respects Valeria so much and is like, she gets it. I'm like, what? That's I guess that is sort of an uncle thing, but that's just it's 100%.
So I think that's what's going on there. And I think they understand that because, you know, it makes him a more complicated, interesting villain. And they had that earlier in this series where he brought through. Again, I'm forgetting the exact circumstances because they're so wild, but there was that whole colliding of the dinosaur dimension and the Marvel Universe, and Dr. Doom and the Dr. Doom dinosaur were like, well, we know what to do. We're going to bring these kids back using this. And of course, he was wrong and going to cause calamity. So ultimately, Ben Grimm stopped him. So that's his role now, is to be like, I know better than Petty Richards. And then he doesn't really. He's going to make the situation worse.
Somehow. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it had a cute ending.
You just don't like Reed Richards. You don't like your things. What about a Reed Richards Cyclops team-up book? Would you read that, Pete?
Those guys.
I'd rather shoot myself in the foot.
It's a Reed Richards Cyclops team-up book called Pinata Special. What do you think,
Pat? Ooh, yeah. Ooh. Well, Pete, let me say, back in the Meow book, did you like when Cyclops shot the laser beam and the cat was chasing it?
I was like, that's the best thing you've ever done, Cyclops.
There you go. You got a win in there. See, you loved him in that moment. Yeah.
Titans Beast World Tour Atlantis number 1 from DC Come Comics, written by Cena Grace, Frank Thierry, and Megan Fitzmartin, art by Ricardo Federici, Valentine Delandro, and M.L. Sanapo. Beasts have taken over the DC universe, and now we're finding out about sea beasts.
Underwater beasts. Pete, you must have loved this because you love being under the sea. Let's talk about it, Pete.
All right, great. So, yeah, I mean... First off, the art style. I mean, oh, this is so cool. I love how it starts. It pulls you in. It's so fantastic. Crazy-ish. Really loved all the twists and turns. Cool other stories as well in this issue. I just feel like this really, you got a lot of bang for your buck here. And it was kind of a we're getting more and more in as this kind of beast kind of takeover is going on. The story is unfolding in a cool way.
Would you say that the art is super tight sea cucumbers?
No, I wouldn't. I would say it was super tight nanners.
Oh, is there some sort of underwater banana? Because I would say sea cucumber.
That's pretty close when it comes to underwater bananas.
Yep.
Well, we'll look into that. Justin, what did you think?
Let's talk to our research about the underwater nanners situation. It's called a situation because that's what we're in at this point. I said this about the X-Men books, but this Beast World event, I feel I need the main story. Because I feel like we're just off in these, we've been off in so many side places that I'm like,
wait for it, bro. You got to wait for
it. Yeah, but I'm like, so what does it mean that Mira's sort of seahorse adjacent animal? Like, I'm like, what is all this? We're getting little fragments, but like, what's the fight? Is everyone just losing? Are we all, everyone's just beasts? Because it feels like we just see people transform. Everyone's like, oh no. And then then the story ends.
It's a bunch of weird green starfishes that came out of Gar Logan's body flying in and out of people's mouths over and over again.
And that, I like that though. I love the first issue of this and I just feel like it's a strange structure for an event. Mm-hmm. It has me longing for your classic Infinity Gauntlet 6-issue main story and
read this one and then a couple other side ones that'll give you a little bit more of the story, but then it's going to come back and then you'll get more. But then
I don't even mind. It's not about the volume of books. I don't mind many. It's more, I want the main story and then all the other satellite comics I will read, but give me the main story so I know what's happening. I feel like now the way crossovers work, it's like alpha book. Uh-oh, this bad thing's happening. And then 50 books where it's like, here's a little fragment. And then like months later, we get back to Omega. Here's how it worked out. I'm like, this isn't a crossover. This is like a random, like scattershot event. And I want the spine.
I did really like the art of this book, to Pete's point. Valentine Deladro in particular is one of my favorites, so very happy to see that. I do think, to your point you're making, Justin, it's a little non-specific how these spores work. Like the fact that Black Manta was like, I'm a gigantic manta ray monster.
Yes, it didn't make sense.
Very cool, but does not line up with anything else that is happening in any of these
books. It's a small monster.
Yeah. It feels relatively uncoordinated, this event, and I like the pieces, but to your point that you're saying, I don't feel like it's cohering into a whole.
Maybe it's how evil you are, and that's how big you get.
I guess.
Ooh, that's cool. Maybe. I wish that was like true in reality.
Like Hitler would have been
very large. Because then you could see him coming. You'd be like, that guy's evil.
You
could that guy's see him. So
that's
evil.
The problem with Hitler.
Okay. No, I'm just a painter. So small, I'm just a painter. No, you're not. You are not just a painter. You are 70 feet tall.
You're too big to be nice. You too fuck. You're too big to be nice. You fuck.
That you mean? Piece of shit.
Are you saying that the Shaq is an asshole? Is that what you're saying?
I guess I don't know.
I wish we lived on that world.
Right. Wish we lived on the world. That feels like it would put us nice people at a disadvantage, though, if all the evil people were gigantic.
We could run around underneath. If you were super nice, you could fit between their toes. He's so tiny.
Oh, you're also tiny. Oh, okay.
If you're nice, you're so tiny.
The Midnight Show, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Brian Hurt. This is the final issue of this story that is about a bunch of, not exactly Universal movie monsters, but basically that, who came out of a film mashup experiment. They are murdering people in a small town, and one of them wants to become the god of monsters, of the title of the film. This has been a bloody delight. I can't believe it's still coming out in January. Feels inappropriate for an October Halloween book, but at the same time,
October, November, December, January.
Alex. Yeah, I know how months work, but anyway, my point being, I really love this book. Super fun, great art from Brian Hurt. Really good horror premise.
It's kind of weird that you have to do the months on your fingers, Justin.
Oh, that's how you keep track.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
What do you just do? You just think all the months?
February.
February.
I can't do it.
Pinktember.
Oh boy.
And that's all the fingers with names, really. this book is I've also really enjoyed this. I think I called that our Van Helsing was going to be take a turn in this issue. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that. And I like the way this ended. I thought this was a really good horror premise that played out. It was a surprise, surprisingly came through in a big way. So I really enjoyed
that. The twists and turns have been fun for the story. You think you kind of get an understanding and then there's some more twists, which are great. The art school really kind of sets up this cool old school kind of feel to it. The kind of old school monster movies, the art does a great job of capturing that. So yeah, I think this is fun.
Love Everlasting, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Tom King, art by Elsa Charettier. We are, well, spoilers ho, because there's not a good way of describing exactly what goes on in this issue without spoiling what ultimately happens at the end. But we've been following a young woman named Joan, who we don't exactly know what's going on, but she seems to be trapped in some sort of romance comic book simulation where every time she falls in love, she gets killed by this cowboy. She ultimately broke through at the end of the last issue by dying, naturally dying after a long relationship. And now she's back. She's back in a cowboy situation. The spoiler here, the flip here, is it seems like we're turning the series from focusing on Joan to focusing on the origin of our cowboy who has been hunting her this entire time. At least that's my supposition here. Very surprising. I really thought we had another two issues left of the series, but I think it's going to go on for a long time hence.
Well, that's what I was like. It felt like it was ending next issue, but like it doesn't, like the way the story is, it feels like it's just going to keep going. And that's really exciting because who knows where this could go? This has been such a fun read each week. It's like a great homage to romance comics, really well told versions of that, while at the same time having this underlying ongoing fantastical premise that I think is really intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm a little worried about the ending. Because we've had like all these deaths and all this kind of stuff, and I'm just kind of like, I want this to land well so I can talk about it. But yeah, it continues to be very interesting and have really solid art.
Yeah, I mean, Elsa Charettier's art is fantastic throughout. Just really, I think we've probably mentioned this before, but like in the vein of a Darwin Cook, obviously channeling it.
Yeah.
Romance comic books as well. So really good book. I don't know how much more of this I could take, maybe to Pete's point. Well, just I need to start getting some answers. I feel like this Everlasting, you know?
I feel like this issue was a lot about the answers. I think that we're getting the answers. And if you really believe in love, Alex, it is everlasting.
I don't know.
Have you ever thought about that?
Not really, no. No, I haven't thought about that.
Love it's end. Like if you were if you didn't have either of your arms, and someone came up to you, like you would fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. I think, and it would be everlasting.
Could you tell, by the way, that I zoned out for a good half of the show trying to figure out a joke to tell about that, like a joke structure? I was like, "What is the punchline of this joke?" And I think what I worked out just real quick, like I don't think this is good, but like what this is the best I could do on short notice. Is guy sitting down at a bar. He's sitting down and he looks over and he sees he's sitting next to a guy with no arms. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. And he goes back to his drink. After a few moments, somebody comes into the bar, walks over to the man, jerks off the man with no arms until he ejaculates. And then the man goes into his pocket with his mouth and he spits out $5. The guy picks $5, leaves the bar. The guy sitting against the bar is like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Whatever, no big deal. Next day, he comes back to the bar, and once again, the guy with no arms is sitting there. A third man walks in, jerks the guy off until he ejaculates, and then the man with no arms goes
into his pocket. You can just say jerks him off. We don't need the finish.
No, it's important.
it is important.
He does, though.
And Pete, it's important.
It's important. The guy needs to finish. That's the whole thing. We'll get to it in a second. Spits out $5. And then he leaves the bar. Third day, guy sitting in the bar with Drake, like, he's sort of avidly looking at the guy who's sitting next to him. He's like, oh, man, what's going to happen? I really want to see this. This is kind of a really amazing feat that they're doing over here. I really love it. No pun intended. And he just waits and waits. And the guy with no arms is just sitting there and he's waiting and waiting. And finally, the hour is getting late. And the man with no arms gets up off of the steel and starts to walk out. And the guy who's been sitting at the bar is like, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry to talk to you like this. But every day I've been sitting here and a man comes in, jerks you off until you ejaculate. And then you go into your pocket, you pull out $5 and spit it out. Where is he? And the man with no arm says, oh, he quit his hand job. Anyway, wow. That's the best I could do.
That is
short.
Crazy that you were thinking about that the whole time.
The entire time, like 10 books in a row.
I know you've been sitting in silence. We've been sitting in silence for 30 minutes. Yeah. Pete, remember, you started this.
I didn't.
But thank you. You did. You
time
did.
Traveler Tales number two.
Time Traveler Tales number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by David Scheidt, art by Kelly and Nicole Matthews. We are following an all ages series. I mean, this is an all ages series.
He quit his hand job.
I like when you shout it.
You liked it. You're going to tell this. You're going to tell this joke, Pete. You absolutely are. You're going to wake up your nephews.
I will say real quick, one last thing on it. Pete, you literally walked in here and was like, yeah, it's a guy with no arms who's getting jerked off all the time. And Alex is trying to fix it for you. So, like, I think you should give him a little bit of love for that. You should give him a virtual hand job.
He didn't need to say till completion. It would have been fine if he
I believe
just
he said ejaculation, but yes. It's an important part of the writing.
That, I was trying to help him with that.
Yeah. It's worth it for the writing alone.
Help each other. That's the important part.
That's the lesson. That's the philosophy of this whole joke is we're all trying to help each other.
Especially if you don't have any arms.
And the man in the kingdom of no armed men, the man with a hand job is king.
Oh boy.
Anyway, Time Traveler Tales, Time Traveler falls into the Little Rascals.
I wonder how many listeners we lost today.
I love that we're talking about the most all ages book of all leading into coming out of this conversation. This book doesn't make sense and I don't understand it.
What are you talking about? It makes a ton of sense. It's about adorable young love and it's very cute.
That part is fine, but this kid shows up and is like, where's this pocket watch that teleports me through time? And everyone's like, we don't know. Oh, yes, there's a man who has all of the watches. And then they all go there, and then he's like, all right, here I go, off into time. I was like, what is this?
I agree with you. I like the whole Little Rascals pulling a heist-type situation in order to get two girls together who are in love with each other. The dad's like, oh, honey, I love that. Hooray! Very inclusive, very sweet. Yep. But the time traveler part makes no sense whatsoever.
In the first issue, I was also like, what? This doesn't make any sense. And when the guy was on a farm or whatever, and they're like, what's a watch? And they find one, and then he leaves. I was like, this is like very light.
Yeah, but think about that. Like, if you saw someone pick up a watch, you're going to work your whole life so you can buy that watch, you know, so you can disappear places. You know what I mean?
There you go. This is Pete's favorite book of the week.
Captain America number 5 from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Elad Medina. Captain America over two time periods is fighting against different villains in the present. There is a demon who essentially wants to eradicate him from history so that he can stop doing good things. And back good in luck. The day, young Steve Rogers, pre-Super Soldier Serum, is fighting against none other than Baron Zemo, who's in New York at the very real Nazi rally that happened at Madison Square Garden in 1939. Real black mark on New York and American history. But he gets involved in that and has to stop him. So lots of stuff going on here. What do you guys think? I have some thoughts, but I'm curious to hear what you guys thought.
Interesting. Yeah, you go. I'm curious.
Okay. I really like the series at the start. I still really like Lon Medina's art. It's just so nice and clean throughout. It feels very iconic and old school. There are way too many jokes in the present. Like, it is nonstop.
Well, that's what I was going to highlight, this Doctor Strange doll thing. I was like, this is, and honestly, I think it's pretty funny. Like,
sure.
But it's just such a tonal mismatch to everything else that's happening.
Yes. Yeah. That is my big problem. It's like the jokes are good, but this is a pretty serious situation that we've been treating pretty seriously. And now they're just making jokes about Dr. Strange doll head being like, oh no, you have half a granola bar in your pouch. Fun jokes. What are they doing here? And then back in the day, I really like the idea of young Steve when we started out always being who he is. And yelling out at the Nazi rally in Central Park. Smart. The idea that young Steve Rogers was an elite agent working for the mob trying to stop Baron Zemo from blowing up Madison Square Garden or whatever is going on there, too much. This is J. Michael Straczynski getting into Ezekiel territory for me, where he's like, Spider-Man was always Spider-Man. He was meant to be Spider-Man.
You hate like, there's that.
I don't like that because I think it messes, you can tweak things and you can change things about an origin and you can retcon things, so that's fine. But Steve Rogers was a good guy who ultimately kept flopping out of the army and then got this chance to be the man he knew he was inside. If he already was essentially a super soldier wheezing with asthma, but crawling through the sewers and fighting Baron Zemo and all of these other things, he was already there. Like, that changes him too radically for me. So this is the issue where it started to diverge into neither of these plot lines are working for me. But again, I'm curious to see if you guys felt the same or differently.
I liked it more than that. I don't mind younger Steve fighting the Nazis because I think it actually does track with the rest of his stuff in a way. I like how much he's just trying really hard, which is, I think, Captain America's real superpower, just like never giving up. And so I think we're establishing that as opposed to like making him too super heroic. Sure, it's a little Forrest Gumpy with the way that it's coming through. And, you know, that's a little annoying, I guess. But like, I don't mind it as much. And as much as the jokes are strange in this story, I like them. And to me, though, the present day story is just extreme on extreme. It's extreme jokes. They go so far the way to be like, this demon's going to fucking kill you, Steve. He's going to kill you. And I'm like, no, why are you going so hard powering up, juicing up this demon? And it just feels like it's going unnecessarily hard. And I guess we'll see where that lands us. But I especially like the way the timelines come together at the end of this issue.
Well, that part I agree with. I feel like the badass ending to this kind of gets me excited for what's next and not kind of the weirdness that kind of happens a little bit in this issue. I just think that the art's unbelievable and, you know, we're dealing with a lot of interesting things. Sometimes it hits harder than others, but I just don't know who gives up halfway through a granola bar. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm only gonna eat half a granola bar?
Like, what the
not my Captain America.
You know, it's like, oh man, all this granola is really filling me up. I better save this for later. Like, what?
Here's the thing. Yeah, I get halfway through that and I hit a raisin. Like, when you hit a raisin like really hard and it's like full raisin energy.
Mm-hmm. Fuck like, that I'm granola out. Bar. I'm out.
Wait, yeah. You're not surprised by the raisin and it shuts down the whole thing?
Sometimes the raisins can sort of like sneak in under the radar, you know, where you're not hitting them too hard and you're hitting the nuts. But then you hit a raisin right on the front, you know what I mean? Right on the taste bud. Get out of here with that granola bar. Go to
bed. The pedestrian life
into the pouch.
The oddly pedestrian life on right on top of a mint too. Very gross. The oddly pedestrian life of Christopher Chaos number 6 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Isaac Goodhart. This is the end of this first arc where we have Christopher Chaos and his monster friends are being attacked from all sides. And Christopher finally steps up and becomes the hero we knew he could be. You know, I used the word off-kilter earlier to talk about Ministry of Compliance. I think that's also very applicable here because everything feels a little off all the time. And I think that's
in a great way,
in a positive way. I really like this book. This feels like nothing else on the stands or anything else that I've ever read. I'm excited to see that it is continuing past this issue.
Chris Chaos. Yeah, this is a great ish. Loved all the action. Good guys start winning, so that's always nice to Yeah, it's kind of messed up. They were laughing at Frank with no hand, but great art. Loved all the creative action. Fun-ish.
I also really like this. It's really smart, really different. Makes sense. It's coming from our guy from the Tiny Onion comics line. Tate Brumball writing it. Reminds me of What's the Furthest Place from Here a little bit.
Oh, in this sort of
some tone there. So like, if you like that book, definitely check this out.
The Amazing Spider-Man number 41.
Oh, sorry, real quick. I just want to say one more thing going back a little bit. Do you imagine, do you believe that Captain America's pouches are that messed up? Like he's stuffing mints in there?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a he's like an old a purse? Man.
He probably has like Werther's in at least five of those
pouches. Oh, he's got coins. He's got coins in with his granola.
Subway tokens. He's like, can you still use these?
And someone's like, hey, man, can I borrow a buck? And he's like, which pouch does that let in? Like he's more organized than that.
He's all over the place, man. Half a granola bar, a mint, Doctor Strange's head.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. The Amazing Spider-Man number 41 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. We are following two fronts on the gang war in this issue as Wilson Fisk literally butts heads with Tombstone, with She-Hulk, and Spider-Man caught in the middle. Meanwhile, Beetle is coming directly for the Rose, a.k.a. Wilson Fisk's son. And we have some twists, potentially, in both of these fights. We have been enjoying Amazing Spider-Man for the first time in a long time. I think all three of us did that continue in this issue. Pete?
Yeah. So I love this comic. Right. I really felt like, you know, this did a great job of kind of like really grabbing the reader. I felt like there was a, you know, when this started and you got all these superheroes and villains like jammed in this small room, it's kind of like this, oh shit, what's about to go down? I love the tension of that and really just set up this big giant fight, which was really awesome. Yeah, I felt like it was kind of hilarious the way the fight ended, though, where Fisk just got a phone call and he's like, hold on, I have to take this call. And everybody's like, oh, okay. Like, if you're in the middle of a fight with somebody, you don't stop because the other person got a phone call. You keep fighting. But other than that, I mean, Romita Jr.'s art's just unbelievable. And this is just kind of fun, all action, not dealing with the other madness. So I'm happy about this.
I agree. This is great. Classic Spider-Man. Spider-Man gets to be quippy, not a
Kingpin's
ton of like.
Kingpin's awesome in this.
Kingpin's so good in it. The Tombstone stuff is great. It's just really firing on all cylinders, like you're saying.
Mortal Terror number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Christopher Golden and Tim Leben, art by Peter Bergting. I believe Pete and I talked about this last issue and how it basically broke both of our brains. It is a monster flipped book where we're looking at Dracula, but all the humans are vampires and vampires are humans. It's all opposite in terms of how it works. Pete, did it break your brain again in this issue, or is your brain okay?
Well, it got a little weird, but I think fun last panel. The whole like sucking blood, but then being like, no, not too much, you know, that whole thing got a little weird. But other than that, I felt like it was cool. I didn't feel too lost. It's definitely a weird but interesting story.
I really like this. I think it's I like the flip. I like the way the depth of the world is really nice. It's a great premise that I haven't really seen before. I wish the title was a little more distinct because it just sounds like another horror book. And I get there's a pun there with Mortal Terror, but like it just feels like if the title was a little poppier, I think this book would just be a banger.
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, the conversation between two old friends where the one friend was like, get it together. It smells like sex in here. And the other one was like, I'm a sex vampire now. Like, fuck you. You know, like, I don't know.
That's not what the dialogue is. I
pretty
understand.
Pretty close.
It was pretty.
I say that a lot, though.
Mm-hmm.
It smells like sex.
Do you call your vampire sex friends like that?
Sex friends? Yeah. Who are your sex friends?
Yeah. No, I said it is weird when I go over to my sex friend's house and their house smells like sex. I'm like,
hold on. I just got here. What the fuck? Yes.
What?
All my sex friends have flaming rats, though. Is that that's true of you guys too?
No.
All my sex friends live in Texas. Sticker that Texans. Says that,
right? All my sex friends have flaming rats. Yeah. My other sex friend has a flaming rat.
That's oh boy!
My has. Anyway,
my flaming rat graduated from honors.
Graduated from honors.
Boy, I really hope every show this year is like this. Doctor Strange, number 11, from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Danilo S. Bayruth. After the big events of the past 10 issues, we are sort of getting a done in one here as Clea and Doctor Strange take Clea's younger sister out to the carnival and encounters a new circus of crime. This is very fun. It was a nice refresher after the big last arc. It felt to me, and this is nothing against Jed McKay's writing, but it felt to me like it was a Mark Waid book in a certain way.
Yeah.
But very fun. And I really like the art. The art sort of leaned into sort of an old school vibe quite a bit. And I really enjoyed that too.
Agree. This is such a palate cleanser. I've loved the arcs leading up to this, so it's not like I was needing a break. But it was fun to see, like, just Doctor Strange and Clea having a nice time out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit of the old, oh, God, what could go wrong if Doctor Strange is babysitting? But, you know, the ghost dog kind of stuff at the end was kind of sweet. So that would kind of made up for it a little bit. But yeah, this is adorable, amazing art. It's kind of a cute story.
There you go. And that is it for the first stack of 2024. Oh,
yeah. They had some fun henchman names. You had Chief Beef and Jim Nasty.
Yeah, Chief Beef is fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Good.
If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also doing a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Workshop.
Chief Beef is the name I say when I go to the bar to jack off a no-armed man.
I do. I can see it in your face.
Don't quit your hand job.
It's coming. Don't quit your hand job. Oh, boy.